Hello and welcome to another episode of the NBCSports.com College Basketball Talk Podcast. It's Tuesday, January 22nd. My name is Rob Doster. I have a fun show on the way for you today. The Monday Overreactions Podcast is one day delayed. I took advantage of the MLK Jr. holiday on Monday to attend two OB appointments with my wife, who is 7 months pregnant, the loving and attentive father that I am. For the podcast today, I have a good show. I was able to connect with my buddy from One Shining Podcast and The Ringer, one Mr. Mark Titus. We have a really good conversation about the Big Ten, about what is going on with Indiana, about who the best team in Michigan is, and of course, we break down everything that happened between Virginia and Duke on Saturday night. Before I get into that, I got to make the usual ask. Please rate, please review, please subscribe to this podcast in any app that you listen to podcasts in. Any interaction that you have with this episode, whether you download it, whether you subscribe to it, whether you listen to it, whether you rate it, whether you review it, it all helps. It helps in the metrics. It helps in the rankings. It helps make my bosses happy. When my bosses are happy, I'm happy. When I'm happy, you are getting a better show. So really, giving me 5 stars and saying something nice about me is only going to make your afternoon better. So I thank you for that. And now let's get into that conversation with Mark Titus. And now let me welcome on from One Shining Podcast and Club Trillion fame, one Mr. Mark Titus. Mark, what's going on, man? How you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. Just trying to stay warm. I've never been so excited to see rain in the forecast in Ohio. I'm looking ahead at this forecast and it's supposed to rain, I think, on Wednesday or Thursday. And I'm very excited for that because that means no snow and no, it's no longer cold. And yeah, that's pretty much it. I know that's a very cliche way to start a podcast, but I really can't take it. The cold is killing me.
Yeah, at least you guys got snow out of it, man. We didn't even get snow. We just got ice and we had like sub-zero temperatures and that was it. It's been miserable.
Well, I mean, snow seems fun. Like, if you're picturing snow, you're picturing, like, building snowmen and going skiing and stuff like that. For some snow, my snow experience is just basically spending, like, 3 hours shoveling my driveway. and, like, my face is freezing and my toes are freezing. But, I don't know. The kids love it. Kids love snow, so I can't be the old man in the neighborhood who's hating on it.
Yeah, and the other problem is, like, we don't even get a day off. You know, if we have a snow day and there's like a foot and a half of snow outside, I still have to go online and blog because I work from home. I don't have a commute. It's not like I can't go down my stairs and get to my office.
It's true. I tried to get a 2-hour delay for work and they just laughed at me. And it's not fair. I said, man, I want to go back to the good old days.
The worst part about it for me, I told you off air that my garage door broke and it doesn't actually shut. But the other bad part is like my dog doesn't want to go outside and play outside at all. But she's a boxer and she's 3 years old and she has more energy than any animal that I've ever seen in my entire life, which means that all she does now is just tear around the house and tear up and down the stairs and chase our cat and just losing her absolute mind. But she won't go outside and run around and get that energy out. So I don't know what to do.
You know how every city in the cold says that it's an awesome time. Like I hear this about like New York. I hear it about Chicago. Chicago's the big one. Maybe it's just because I live in the Midwest. But when people talk about Chicago, they're like, man, it's the greatest city in the world in the summer. And the older I get, the more I realize that Chicago is awesome in the summer. I love going to Cubs games. I love going up there. But it's more of like that's the only time the city's actually accessible. That's what I'm learning is that like I feel that way about I feel that way about every cold weather city. It's like we love summer so much and we think that the city's so awesome in the summer because it's just basically so miserable for 5 months out of the year that when the sun finally comes out, you're like, man, this city's awesome in the summer.
And you know what we have to look forward to now? We have to look forward to a Final Four in Minneapolis. Here's to hoping for a heat wave in early April.
At least they build the tunnels and all that kind of stuff, so they're prepared for it. So I do appreciate that. But yeah, fingers crossed, man. We need some warm weather for that Final Four.
Yeah, and you really need to get out of the Midwest, man. You've been there for 3 decades of your life, and I think that you spend what? How long have you been in LA? Like a couple months total, and now you're already spoiled. You can't go back.
It's the worst. It makes me so soft. Everything. That's why, like, I don't have a problem criticizing the Pac-12 and West Coast basketball and all that stuff because I've experienced it firsthand of how soft you are when you are on the West Coast. It's undeniable. It happened to me, and that's all I needed. I have a data sample of one, and that's enough. It happened to me. I'm assuming it's happened to the Pac-12 guys. Yeah, that's the issue. It's just too nice out there. When you're living in Syracuse, New York, of course you want to get in the gym and get shots up. When you're living in Westwood, like, who wants to practice basketball when you can walk around campus and
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 go to the
just
beach and enjoy the
yeah, go.
warm weather. Yeah, no, I hear you.
No kidding. So, anyway.
So part of the reason I have you on here is I need you to help explain to me what's going on in the Big Ten and specifically like what the hell is going on with Indiana.
Oh, man.
But before we do all of that, I've been watching the Fire Festival documentaries and like all these scams that are getting built up. And at the same time, I'm hearing you talk about this scholarship program that you have, and I need you to talk me through it so I can make sure that you're not,
Right.
fire festivaling everybody in the on the internet. So explain to me what you're doing with this program, how it came about, and this is probably the reason why the last time I texted you to come on the podcast, you said I can't do it. I have business meetings.
Oh, I did have a business meeting, and I probably actually used that phrase, business meetings,
Yes, you
because
did.
that's something I wouldn't know how to phrase it, so I would just be like, what is it that adults say? Business meetings. That's right. Yeah, I thought the Firefest thing was going. I thought you were going. I thought the segue had to do with Indiana and disasters, and yeah, I thought we were going that way. But so
That
no,
could have
this is
worked
not a
too.
scam. This
Could
is
have
not
worked
a
too.
scam. This is not a scam, which is famous words of people who are running a scam say. So I to understand the story, you have to go all the way back to when I was playing at Ohio State. Mostly because I just like to remind people that I did in fact play at Ohio State, but I was on scholarship. I was one of the walk-ons lucky enough to get a scholarship. My first 2 years I was at Ohio State. They basically just had extra ones laying around that were going to go to waste. They threw one to me. I thought it was awesome. And then when I was a junior, our team got hit with APR infractions, whatever it is. Like our academic rating wasn't good enough, and it was basically just because we had so many guys going pro early. And I've talked to the coaches and the director of ops at Ohio State about like what exactly happened, and it's the most convoluted mess I've ever heard. And I've basically learned that APR is like a horrible system for judging academic progress. Anyway, we get hit with the APR, we lose two scholarships, and spoiler alert, we did not take the scholarships away from John Diebler and Evan Turner. We took the scholarships away from me and the other walk-on on the team. And I remember that moment. That was like that was the birth of the supervillain, you know? Like that was the moment I was like, when I grow up, I'm gonna make sure this never happens again. And I just had that thought of like, man, that sucks. Like I never expected a scholarship. I was really blessed. I was very fortunate to have gotten one for even one semester, much less 2 years. So I was very happy with it. But I just remember feeling like the system is definitely rigged against the walk-ons who, by the way, I had the best GPA on the team and I was being punished for academic grading. That's certainly how it felt. So I had that thought. I was like, man, if I could ever do something for walk-ons, I should do that. And then I don't know, man. I'm just at the position now. Like I'm old enough. I've kind of established myself and with my career and everything and have some sort of get some publicity behind it. And I think what the weirdest thing about it all is like as I've gotten older, I kind of thought my whole Club Trillion thing for that started in 2008. We're 10 years in now. It's 2019, I guess, would be 11 years. It's over 10 years ago I started that whole thing. I thought that was just going to be like a phase of my life that I wrote a little blog while I was on the team, and then I moved on to whatever was next. But it's not. It still continues to be. That's the number one thing that people tweet at me on Twitter. If I log into Twitter, I wake up and I get on Twitter. And I got like a ton of notifications. Either something happened with Evan Turner or somebody got a big trillion. Someone got like a 12 trillion or something, and everyone's tweeting at me about it. And those are like the two things that people still bring up to me. And the whole Evan Turner thing is from the blog also. So the point being, like this is a brand that is not will not go away. Not that I want it to, but it's just like it resonated with people and it still does. And I feel just like an immense obligation and responsibility to use this platform that I've built for myself. To give back and help out. And I think that's a really cool idea, not because I came up with it, but just because I think it is just a cool idea. I mean, everyone goes nuts for those videos of the walk-ons getting the surprise scholarships, right? So that's kind of how it all came about. And I have put it off for a little while because I didn't think I had the resources. I was always waiting for the perfect time. And then I had a guy kind of push me over the edge. That gave me the pep talk of like, if you're waiting for the perfect time's never going to come. You should just start it now and see what happens. And that's kind of what we did. And the whole 10-year anniversary of the blog made a lot of sense. So That's pretty much it. That's how we got to this point with it.
So how do you, who are you going to give it out to? Have you figured out what that selection process is going to be, and when are they getting it?
Yeah, so we're working through a couple of things. We are going to give it to Division I men's walk-ons, not because we're trying to be exclusive, but because we're trying to be just hyper-focused right now. We want to make sure we're, like the goal, I started a foundation called the Club Trillion Foundation to award the scholarship because that's what the lawyers told me to do. They said, don't award it yourself, start a foundation. So we started a foundation, and then by starting the foundation, I was like, man, it'd be cool if we could serve walk-ons of every sport, of men's and women's sports, all that kind of stuff. But for the time being, we're focusing on what I was, which was a men's a Division I men's basketball walk-ons. And we are still figuring out the best way to go about awarding the scholarship. So it's going to be we're going to make the guys – first of all, I talked to the NCAA about it. We have to have a committee of people vote on it that represent different schools around the country. So I've reached out to a lot of guys on my committee who are my whole committee is going to be made up of former walk-ons as well. So I think that's a pretty cool wrinkle of it, is that these guys that are eventually going to vote on who the winner is, they all will have been former Division I walk-ons themselves. So there is that, which is an NCAA mandate, but also it makes it more fun anyway to have that set up. But then as far as like the timing, I'm on the fence because, as I said, like I've learned through the development of this that the APR thing kind of screws up a lot of stuff, and not to bore the entire audience, but basically like the way the NCAA rules have changed is that it used to be like if a guy transferred in the middle of the season, that scholarship that the guy had was off the books for the rest of the season. And now schools can then take a guy transfers in the middle of the season, schools can take his scholarship and give it to a walk-on. So what's happening, like the example that comes to mind is TCU. The TCU walk-on just got a walk-on because TCU had a guy play had a player transfer at semester. Then the walk-on, that was the most recent video I saw. So he gets a scholarship at semester. So knowing that, like, I don't want to award a scholarship to a guy for a full season and then maybe halfway through the year his team puts him on scholarship. So we're still trying to figure out the best way to get around that. And if maybe it's like an end of the year thing where we retroactively pay off all the loans that they took, we're still working on that. I have a board, a legitimate board of directors for this foundation. I do have legitimate people that I'm working with, so we're still bouncing that idea around. But in the meantime, the meat and potatoes of the thing is set in stone. So
not a scam.
It's definitely not a scam, and I can't say that enough. It's definitely 100%. Not a scam. Now, if you donate a certain level, though, we go on a tropical vacation to an undisclosed island, and we will send you a uniform to wear before you go to this island. But otherwise, no, it's not a scam, not at all, definitely.
Well, that's awesome, man. It's cool to hear you using your influence that way, whatever influence it is that you actually have. But now I think it's probably time we got to talk about some hoops. And last thing before we do talk about the Big Ten, I know that you are with me in thinking that. Virginia is I don't know, fun basketball is the right way to put it, but you appreciate what Virginia does. I know you watched that Virginia Duke game. Sure. What were your takeaways from it? Personally, I'm more sold on Virginia, on this being the year Virginia gets to the Final Four, than ever before after watching them basically play isolation basketball for an entire half and hanging with Duke and Cameron.
Yeah, that was the weird thing. It was not a good game. It was a close game between two good teams that had a lot of highlights, yet somehow I felt like that wasn't a good basketball game. And it's for the reason you said, it was just basically isolation. Duke definitely made Virginia play Duke style of basketball. And as you said, they hung with them. And that kind of, in a weird way, even though Virginia lost, I'm sort of with you that like that is an encouraging thing, because the problem we always see with Virginia is they have their system. They never have a plan B, basically, right? They go into the NCAA tournament. They've been destroying teams all year, playing a certain style. Then a curveball comes. Obviously, most famously last year with the 16 seed, UMBC starts hitting threes. Virginia panics and then just snowballs and gets away from them, and they don't know what to do. I think this team is definitely built differently, but I feel like we've said that every single year. I'm not a skeptic. Like I genuinely do think that they're different. I do think that every Virginia team has been uniquely different from teams past. And going into the tournament last year, I did feel like last year's Virginia team was different. And the big reason why was DeAndre Hunter. And when he went out, I'm not going to pretend like I called the 16-1 upset by 20 points. But it wasn't quite as shocking to me, because what made Virginia so good last year was having a guy like DeAndre Hunter who could go get you a bucket, you could just stick him on if the pack line defense is there's something wrong with it, whatever, like the teams figure out a way to exploit it. Like last year in that game, Tony Bennett could just stick DeAndre Hunter on Jarius Lyles, and I'm not saying he's going to completely shut him down, but I'm sure he would frustrate him. And to have that sort of wrinkle was different. And so this year's team, man, they have the depth. They have they can isolate with guys. They have multiple guys. I mean, I love Braxton Key. I love Keehee Clark. I love obviously the big three that they have. Even like Jay Huff off the bench is really good. And he was playing well against Duke. I don't know. He should have got more minutes, I thought, in the second half.
I think Zion Williamson killed him.
Yeah, that's pretty much what happened. as is happening to many people who try to guard Zion. But yeah, that's I don't know. I definitely am a believer in Virginia, but I also understand if you're listening to me and you have been following my thoughts on Virginia for the last 3 or 4 years, I understand that this is a broken record, and I say this every year. So I get why people would be skeptical, but I also, in a vacuum, like each individual year, I am more optimistic about Virginia than the year before, and that certainly applies to this team.
I mean, I say it over and over again. You know, every coach in the country is not good enough to win the big one until, you know, they finally go out
until
and do
they
it.
Do. Yeah, right.
And 3 years ago, we said that Jay Wright was the team, and Jay Wright and Villanova just kept choking in the NCAA tournament, and they couldn't get out of the first weekend, and you could never bet on them to go far. You always had to pick them to get upset, and you know they didn't have enough talent to get it done. You can't shoot three-pointers and win an NCAA tournament, and you know here we are 3 years later, and they've won two of the last three. So
Ryan before that, you know?
Yep. Mark Few, Bill Self, yeah. Jim Calhoun, Lute Olson. Like, we say it with everybody. And it's just the nature of – it's like that in every sport, right? Like, even in the NBA, they say you can't do it until you go out and do it. And it just so happens that the nature of the NCAA tournament, where you get knocked out after one game, if you have a bad game, it's done. And it's just more high variance. You know, I remember – was it 2016 when in the first game of the playoffs – in the first round, the Warriors lost to the Grizzlies. Am I making that up? There was one year where they lost in the first round of the Grizzlies, and if it was a one game tournament in the NBA playoffs, they would have been done. They wouldn't have won that year.
Oh yeah. That was the and then Conley got hit in the face and had to wear the face mask. They had a pretty good series that year. Yeah.
And if if it was a one game knockout tournament in the playoffs, the Warriors never would have won that year. And maybe we're not talking about them as a dynasty, but. It's a seven-game playoff in the NBA, so the best team is almost always going to win. You know, the way I like to put it is the NCAA tournament is the best way to determine a champion, but it's the worst way to figure out who the best team in college basketball is. And I think that Virginia, more than anybody, has kind of proven that to us. Well, go ahead.
I think the weird thing too is, like you said, the Virginia was it's really strange because everyone wants to make fun of Virginia for losing the 16 seed. Listen, I make fun of everybody and everything, so I'm not going to stop you. I think it is kind of funny that they lost by 20. But what makes it weird and bizarre is that Virginia wrecked the entire ACC. This wasn't a case of like not to pick on Gonzaga, but let's say it's like Gonzaga before we knew that Gonzaga was consistently great every year. Say it's like 2009 Gonzaga team or something before everyone's on board with like Gonzaga being a legit program year after year. If Gonzaga had a hot team, or like the Morrison Gonzaga team, say, and they get a one seed and they lose by 20, then people are like, oh, these guys were frauds and it's kind of funny and whatever, and jokes can be made. But the weird thing about the Virginia thing is they lose by 20, but we saw that same team just absolutely destroy the best conference in college basketball all season long. So it's kind of, I mean, on the one hand, obviously they did lose, but at the same time, you can't really say that they're not a great team and all that, because we just saw it all season long where they did get challenged. They beat Duke at Duke. They only lost two games all season heading into the tournament. So, some of that stuff's crazy. I think the thing with Virginia, though, is, and I think even Virginia fans will agree, is just that whole plan B thing, is that they are a great basketball team, but as you said, the NCAA tournament is not necessarily an exercise in crowning the best basketball team. So knowing that, I feel like Tony Bennett has gone into every tournament saying, we have the best team, this will work. We have the best team, this will work. We have the best team. and maybe he's learned like, oh, okay, so this is a little bit different. It is just a one game thing. You do have to have a backup plan. So hopefully that comes through. You know, like, I'm not a Virginia fan necessarily. I'm not going to necessarily cheer for Virginia to win the national title, but I do hope that, you know, if you're a neutral fan and you want some, I mean, just the way they run the program, they're all easy to root for guys. Tony Bennett is like, I mean, not to be a cliche broken record, but the man is just like as classy as it comes and as gracious in defeat and all that kind of stuff. So, it would be cool to see them figure it out. 'Cause I think, to his credit, like if you're way removed from it all and you just pop in to see Virginia every so often, it does feel like they are doing the same things over and over and just hoping that one day it works. But to his credit, he does change things and he is open to be a little more flexible with stuff. And I don't know, that's what I see at least. So it would be cool to see him get his moment, but
I'm rooting for it. I want to see it happen because I think I root for the stories, right? Like I'm kind of removed from being like a full blown fan. I grew up a UConn fan, but you know, now they're in a conference that no one actually pays attention to. And you know, once you kind of hit your 30s, you stop living and dying with what 19 to 20 year olds are going to do on a basketball court. So I've started rooting for the story and the thing that I think would be the coolest to see. And I would love to see that happen, man. Going from losing in the first round, being the only number one seed to ever lose to a 16 seed, to turn around and come back and win the national title would be a great story, great to watch. And like you said, there are a lot of really good kids in that program that probably deserve the success. And, you know, I would hate – just imagine, like, as a former athlete, imagine having the thing that everybody remembers about you being that you choked in the biggest moment of your life.
That's horrible, man. And that's the thing, too, is, like, all those guys – I mean – I don't know. You see Kyle Guy like writing the letters to himself and DeAndre Hunter is like all those guys are just really easy to root for. That kind of made it harder for me to make jokes about it just because I don't know what I envisioned in my head for the first one seed to lose, but it was probably Duke. It was probably like a really hateable Duke team. And then like everyone in America could just rally behind. And I get it. Like for a lot of people, Virginia is boring. So it was fun to cheer against them and all of that. But I don't know, man. It just didn't. I felt really bad for them, not in the sense that I mean, it is sports at the end of the day. It's competition, and you're not just going to get stuff handed to you. So I don't want to be too soft here and think that they should just get stuff handed to them or anything like that. But, if you know those guys and you follow them, they're very easy to cheer for. And like you said, that's a thing that sucks to be known for. So I am definitely rooting for them. But if Ohio State can make the tournament and play Virginia, I hope we beat them by 1,000 and they cry again. I'll still say that. But yeah, it would be cool though. Like all, you know, it's a great story and I hope they can figure it out for sure.
Where do you stand on Duke this year? Are you with me in saying that they're still the best team in the country?
I would say Virginia's still the best team, even though they lost to Duke. I still think like Virginia, I think that if they play that on a neutral court, Virginia wins. I mean, Trey Jones coming back would be different. Like the Duke team I saw against Virginia is very – I don't like that team at all. That even though they won, I know they beat a great team. But, yeah, when Trey Jones gets back, they're the best team in the country, I would say. I just don't like the isolation thing. Man, I just got a thing for R.J. Barrett, to be honest with you. Like, I don't want to kill the kid too much, but it's just painful to watch. Like, I can't watch – I'm not an isolation guy. I grew up in the isolation era of NBA basketball, you know, like that was the, when I was coming of age, like Iverson was a big deal and Kobe and those guys. So I sort of feel like maybe I should be into that, but maybe that's why I'm averse to it. Maybe that's why it's like, man, I also grew up in Indiana where, we throw chest passes and with their thumbs pointing down and we shot fake and all that kind of stuff. But, yeah, I don't like the way they played, but they're so talented that it's just like that to me was the story of that Virginia Duke game. Was just like neither team was particularly playing good basketball. It's just Duke was so overwhelmingly talented that there's nothing Virginia could really do. And at the end of the day, maybe that's all that matters.
The whole point of the pack line defense is to keep players from driving and getting into the lane, right? And RJ Barrett and Zion Williamson, whenever they wanted to, got into the lane against that defense, and that doesn't happen. Even though RJ, every single time he had the ball, was going left, like, you know exactly what he's going to do, and Virginia's defense is designed to stop exactly what he does, and they still couldn't do it. And so here's the thing. Watching that game, I realized that I need better friends, right? And let me explain this to you why. So I spent all of last week after Trey Jones got hurt. I spent all last week explaining to people how Trey Jones is the most important player on that roster because he lets RJ Barrett move off the ball. So they actually have a point guard, and you know, the tone that he sends defensively is what allows them to get on transition, and they can't play in the half court because whatever reasons that I came up with. And I said that Trey Jones is the most important player on that team. And nobody said to me, Rob, that's fucking stupid. They have Zion Williamson. Nobody said that to me. And that's how I know I need better friends, because I went out and I embarrassed myself for an entire week saying that Trey Jones was more important to Duke than Zion Williamson. And no one said anything to me about it. I need better friends. No one told me that I'm making an idiot out of myself.
It's a weird thing. I think this is an epidemic that's sweeping college basketball. It's not really an epidemic. This is something that's just deeply rooted in college basketball, where the point guard is always the best player on the team. And I don't get it. It's become a frustration for me as well. You see the same things with Michigan, that people just go nuts for Xavier Simpson. I think Xavier Simpson's a very good player. I think Xavier Simpson deserves a ton of credit. I think he's playing out of his mind for Michigan. I think he's very, very good. And Michigan is a different team without him. Xavier Simpson is not Michigan's best player. And for some reason, everyone is – that has become the consensus opinion, it seems, at least from, you know, the same sort of thing you're saying, the people I hear from. And the same was – I don't know. I get the thought of Trey Jones. He is great. He's a very, very good point guard, especially as a freshman. It's incredible how good defensively he is as a freshman point guard for Duke. Like, you would think he'd have some ego about him and have lapses mentally, at least. He is great. They are a completely different team without him. But Zion is Zion, and I know people are fatigued hearing people talk about Zion, guys like you and I, and we're getting too much Zion coverage, but he's unique and for a reason, and as good as Trey Jones is, there are other really, really good point guards in college basketball who can play defense and who can move the ball around. There are no other Zion Williamsons. No other team has anything close to that guy. And he's incredible. I can't say enough good things about him, which is probably why I don't like RJ as much. I would love RJ on a different team, but I feel like he just gets in the way of Zion Williamson. And I kind of like Cam Reddish's game too. And it's clearly not working for Cam. Like, he's definitely on the wrong team. He plays great D, and he's not playing poorly. And I think he's still going to get drafted high, and it's all going to work out for him in the end. But, man, I would love to see that guy spread his wings and fly a little bit too. And, I don't know. The Duke team, they are good though. Like, I think they're going to be fine. I don't think there's any. I don't have any problems with them. Obviously, they just beat Virginia, but they need Trey Jones back for sure. I think for the NCAA tournament run, I think the team we saw against Virginia, even though they won, there's going to be a game where RJ like they win against Syracuse, where he goes 8 for 30 or something. And
yeah, you can win one game. Playing that way, you can't win 6 games playing that way.
Right, exactly. So that is a concern for me. But yeah, assuming Trey Jones is back, Duke is the best team in the country. Just for their talent's just so overwhelming.
Yeah, and if anybody, like, I can't stand people that get sick of hearing about Zion Williamson. Like, he's the biggest story in the sport. He's the biggest story in sports. Period. On Saturday, there was no bigger story in all of sports than Zion Williamson doing what he did to Virginia in the biggest game of the day. And the thing that I think we kind of got lucky in that was the first Saturday that we didn't have a football game basically since August or whatever. And it turns out, you know, we have 4 top 10 teams losing in college basketball. 3 top 10 teams get upset. We have that Kentucky-Auburn thriller leading into Virginia-Duke, which, while it wasn't like the best played basketball game, there was plenty of drama, especially for somebody that had a whole bunch of money on Virginia plus 2.5. So I thought it was great. And if you're sick of all the Zion Williamson coverage, here's the reason that you get so much Zion Williamson coverage. We'll move off of Zion after this, but he is the biggest story in sports. He attracts the most eyeballs. And in a marketplace where people and consumers don't want to pay for the products that they are consuming, they don't want to pay for news, you don't want to pay for the websites that you go and read, you don't want to pay for Twitter followings, the way that media companies and people like us, content creators, the way that you make money and that you're profitable for a business is by attracting readership and attracting eyeballs and attracting clicks and attracting follows and retweets and listens and subscribers and all of that. And the way you do that is by talking about the biggest story in sports, which is Zion Williamson. So if you have a problem with what you're getting and the content you're consuming, be willing to pay something for it so that we don't have to rely on advertising and just people paying attention to it.
I think too, though, the point that needs to be made is all that is true, but this isn't Zion Williamson isn't empty calories.
No, he's not.
It's not all hype. It's not like this is he's a product of some hype machine behind him. Like that's the point, I guess. That's what makes him different than I mean, people were kind of fatigued over like the Ben Simmons coverage, certainly from ESPN, with their stuff. And Trae Young last year got an enormous push, and then he kind of fell off a cliff, or certainly wasn't as good in the second half of the season. Zion's going to be the number one pick in the NBA draft. That's almost certain. He's almost certainly going to be the National Player of the Year. And up until this past AP poll, up until they lost to Syracuse, he was on the number one team in the country playing for maybe the greatest coach of all time. I mean, like, of course we're going to talk about him. And it's deservedly so. I don't know. I think people just – like college basketball, obviously a regional sport. I think people just want to hear about their teams. And that's pretty much it is like – That's pretty much what I've learned is that college basketball is about the programs and the coaches. And anytime like a player seems to rise above that, there just is like an uneasiness from the college basketball community. It's like, whoa, 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 whoa. No one player is bigger than the coach or the program or anything like that. Like that stuff's for the NBA. And there is a little bit of truth to that. I mean, I think that's kind of what makes college basketball great and what makes people love it so much is that it is about the institutions themselves. So when you take like an NBA approach to covering the sport and you apply it to college, you are going to get an adverse reaction from people who are just diehard college basketball fans. But at the same time, come on, man. Like if there's ever a situation where you're going to talk about one player a lot, this
it's
is
got to be Zion. It has to be Zion.
This is the team. This is the guy. This is like everything about it is tailor made for a lot of media coverage. So, I don't know. He's awesome. I can't say enough good things about him. He's a ton of fun to watch, and I will continue talking about him. And anyone who has a problem, maybe follow a different sport. Maybe stop following college basketball this year. Yeah,
you're stuck.
You're going to continue to be disappointed with the coverage.
So, Indiana. Mm-hmm. They just lost their fourth straight game. This one was by 15 points in a final that was probably favorable for Indiana. Made them look a little bit better than the way that game played out. Four straight losses, like I said. Archie Miller is not exactly getting the most out of this team. It looks at times like they don't even care. I don't know. Explain to me what's going on with this Indiana team. What's wrong with them?
If I could do that, how much time do we have? It's been frustrating because I can't figure it out. They have all the like coming into this year. The reason I was sort of high on Indiana was when you looked around the Big Ten coming into this year, and maybe people will disagree at this point in the season, but I'm saying in October, I felt like there were only two or three teams that could contend for a Big Ten title that were definitely better this year than they were last year. And Indiana was one of them. And that was like a reason to be optimistic. Like to me, I thought Michigan State, they lose two lottery picks. They're not going to be as good. Michigan lost a lot of seniors. I didn't think they would be as good. Ohio State lost Kata Bates Diop, they're not going to be as good. Just on down the line, I don't know who else. I'm like, Nebraska is probably better, I thought, coming into the year. But anyway, the point is, like, it seemed like the Big Ten was going to be down. Indiana has Juwan Morgan. I do feel a close attachment to Indiana still. Indiana had Romeo Langford, two of the best preseason, 5 to 7 players in the conference. It just felt like everything should be fine. And I don't know what's going on. It's on the one hand, like if you look at their run of losses, they've lost four straight, but none of them are like the margins are eye opening, but like none of the individual losses are that alarming. You know, there's no like home loss to Rutgers or, you know, losing to Penn State by 15 or anything like that. Like losing at Michigan and at Maryland and home to Nebraska and at Purdue, like all of these are like fine losses. But this team should be better. Yeah, it's frustrating. They shoot like what are they like 65% from the free throw line? That drives me nuts.
It's not good.
The barometer I always use for this stuff is my dad because he went to IU. He's a big IU guy. I that's why I said we earlier is because I was raised an IU fan. And my dad like anytime he's still like one of the old school like complain about turnovers, complain about missed free throws, just that kind of stuff. And anytime, like my dad says, that he turns these games
he's off. Probably one of the guys that hates Zion Williamson, huh?
Yeah, probably. He's like, I mean, yeah, the dunk was good, but his teammate was open. He should have passed it to the open guy. You know, my dad. I was texting him during the Purdue game, and he said he turned it off, like even before the second half. And that to me, you know, I'm putting too much weight my dad's opinion, but that to me speaks volumes of the state of this team, that my dad, who's a one of the biggest IU fans I know, has reached that status where he's not even watching the IU Purdue game because he's like, I've given up on these missed free throws and these turnovers. And it is weird, though. They're just so passive. And it's, I don't know. Part of it is like Romeo Langford is smooth as hell. So he's sometimes he does have that look of like, I don't like, it's not a problem because that's just kind of how he plays. He's just smooth out there and doesn't exert himself too much. But then other times it's like, I don't know. I think this kind of is a problem. Then you look at the box score at the end of the game, he's got 19 points. You're like, okay, so maybe it isn't. What's going on here? I'm not panicking yet, but losing four states, definitely. They got Northwestern coming up. What is that, tonight? I think if that goes poorly, maybe we're panicking. But I still have faith this is all going to work out. I want Romeo to come back. Maybe that's the goal. Maybe that's the silver lining here is that maybe Romeo comes back next year with that recruiting class, and then they're actually really good next year.
Is it like a leadership thing? Because the one complaint that I hear and the criticism that I hear the most, and maybe this is just like Dan Dockage going off or on Twitter or whatever, but it seems like it's an effort thing and it's a defense thing, and it's almost like they don't care. Like, I don't know if that's the right way to phrase it, but I think the point you made about Romeo Langford and kind of the body language that he has, where he doesn't mm-hmm. really show emotion, maybe that's just people getting annoyed and not understanding how they actually feel just based off of what they see of these kids on TV. But that seems to be the biggest criticism of him.
Yeah. There's a lot of that. There's projection. There's body language. I mean, we can jump to a lot of conclusions with this stuff, but it is interesting, though, because Indiana is uniquely – a program uniquely positioned where like the fan base, as I said, like my dad is not alone. He's not an outlier within the Indiana fan base. There are many, many fans in Indiana who when they think Indiana basketball, they think a certain brand of basketball. And with that, it's not necessarily the Bob Knight brand. It's like this, the same kind of, it's the Hoosiers ideal from the movie. It's like this ideal of like an underdog of a team where effort is non-negotiable, where like defense is non-negotiable, where making the extra pass is non-negotiable. Like these are things that are like drilled into every Indiana fan's head. So on the one hand, like I think it's exciting to get guys like Romeo and to get the influx of talent. I think IU has the top three recruits in the state of Indiana coming in next year as well. You get really excited about that, obviously, but then there's always like this stylistic tug of war, and there certainly has been since basically Bob Knight's been fired, of competing in the modern era requires going after these five stars and getting a guy like Romeo Langford, who kind of is a little, I don't want to say passive, but he is kind of just, he's even keeled at all times. When you're the best player on your team, quote unquote, I think Juwan Morgan's been better than Romeo this year, but Romeo's probably still maybe considered the best player. When he's your best player, but then you're also at a program where these values still exist within the fan base, there's always this just a stylistic tug of war that's going on. And I don't know what the solution is, because that's what it takes to win in modern college basketball. I mean, you kind of have to go after not necessarily the five stars, not necessarily the one and done guys, but you can't – gone are the days of like just getting a bunch of two-star guys and trying to win a national championship that way. Like you can't do that anymore. You have to at least – I know people will point to other teams and be like, what about Tennessee? Tennessee's number one in the country and they don't have any five-star guys. Well, first of all, let's see what happens in the NCAA tournament. Secondly, like, that's an anomaly. That's not a sustained thing that's going to happen every single year where, I don't know, I'm rambling a little bit because I'm trying to find answers too, Rob. This is frustrating.
Well, the other part about Tennessee is that they also have two NBA players on their roster. Like, Grant Williams is going to play in the NBA. He's going to be a first-round pick. And Admiral Schofield is going to play in the NBA. He's going to be a first-round pick. And the other part of it is, like, they're old as hell. Admiral Schofield is he a senior?
He's a senior. Grant's a junior, yeah.
Yeah, so both of them are upperclassmen. And I believe that Grant Williams is probably going to graduate this year. So he's got a little bit of that, like, Jalen Brunson in him. And so that's different than relying on a team that starts a freshman point guard that wasn't even a top 100 recruit in Rob Finney, starts a freshman shooting guard in Romeo Langford, whose biggest knock like coming in was that he wasn't a great shooter. He was more of a scorer, not a great shooter. And that relies on two other sophomores that are starting, and neither of them were guys that were considered like high four-star players, future NBA players. So while you do have two guys that have all Big Ten potential, you're also starting a team that has a freshman point guard, which is the most important position in the sport, and is starting four guys that are underclassmen. So, and the other part of it, like this four-game losing streak, all four of those teams are top 20 teams on KenPom, and three of those right. games are on the road.
That's what I mean, yeah. Like, it, in a vacuum, it's not that big of a deal. Like, the schedule doesn't get any easier for them. I mean, Northwestern is I got it pulled up right here. Like, three of their next four on the road. I don't know who – by the way, who the hell scheduled this for IU?
It's brutal, man. And two of those four games are – one of them is Michigan at home, and then next Saturday is Michigan State on the road. Like, that's right. that's awful.
Right. Like, the next game that's like – I mean, yeah, the next home game that is kind of – maybe they can let their foot off the gas is Ohio State, who by that point in the season, Ohio State will also – I mean, the wheels are falling off for Ohio State, so that's going to be interesting. Like, one of those teams is – I don't know, man. It's I think Archie's going to be fine. I know a lot of people – I mean, I played for Archie at Ohio State. I really love the guy. He was a great assistant coach at Ohio State. I'm not going to pretend like I know – I have all the answers to this stuff or that my blessing of Archie means that he's going to be good. And, you know, if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out, whatever. I know, but there are a lot of IU fans that are not necessarily turning on him, but just kind of like scratching their heads, wondering what the hell is going on. How does like Romeo was supposed to be the savior. And that's not happening. But I will say like Archie, at least, he's doing well with the recruiting. I think that's it. I think at the end of the day with IU, when everyone's been complaining, for IU fans, it's like, how do you get back to the 80s and the 70s when you're hanging banners? Like, that's pretty much it. That's the end goal. To have still to this day, per capita, you're pumping out talent like nowhere else on earth than the state of Indiana. And it's frustrating to know that that's true, where all these great recruits are coming out of Indiana, yet the Hoosiers can't compete for national titles year after year. And everyone has all their answers as to how to go about doing it. But, like, it feels like the one consistent solution from young and old all over the Indiana fan base is just keep the Indiana recruits home and then figure out the rest later. And at least Archie's doing that. So I don't want to play the game of, like, always dangling next year's carrot in front of you and you're always waiting for next year. It's kind of the Lorenzo Romar situation where it's like, okay, this year's not as good, but just wait till see what we have coming in next year. But, yeah, I mean – he's on the right track, but and it's not time to panic yet. But four-game losing streak for this team is certainly not what I had in mind.
Yeah, I think he gets it turned around eventually. I think it might take a little bit of time, and I still think that Indiana makes the tournament this year. There's not enough bad losses on their resume left, and they're gonna at some point they're gonna start winning these games. Now, like
I think so too. I think, as we said, like the schedule, their Big Ten schedule is brutal to start, and it will open up in the second. I mean, I know the Big Ten's deep and good. And there's no such thing as an easy win, et cetera, whatever everyone wants to say. But it will open up, and I think they'll get hot in February, and they'll make the tournament, I think.
Six of their last nine games are going to be at home, and there's going to be games against they get Purdue at home, they get Wisconsin at home, they get Michigan State at home. They get Ohio State at home, and they get Iowa at home. And all of those games are winnable, and all of those games are going to be quadrant one wins, and all of them are going to be – you get three of them, and that's more or less enough to get you into the NCAA tournament. So I'm not super worried about that yet. Let's talk a little bit about the Michigan schools. Are you on this bandwagon that Michigan State is better than Michigan at this point?
I would say so. I don't necessarily think that means anything as it pertains to the NCAA tournament quite yet. And I don't think necessarily – like, I just think at this moment in time, Michigan State is playing better. I mean, obviously, Michigan just lost at Wisconsin, and Michigan State just beat the brakes off Maryland. Was that last night? I think Michigan State's playing better, but I still believe in Michigan. I think, like, Michigan – I don't know. I don't want to say that the loss at Wisconsin was a good thing, but there was sort of – I think for this team, I do subscribe to that a little bit. Like I'm trying to not use cliches here, Rob, but like maybe they did.
No, I love cliches. Use them all.
Maybe they did peak a little too early. Like Michigan feels like a team that the whole reason this Michigan team is so good or was so good – I mean, they still are good. The reason they became – were 17-0 and destroyed North Carolina and went to Villanova and destroyed the defending national title, the defending national champs. The reason all that happened to me is because I feel like they knew they weren't that good, if that makes sense. Like, they went into this season, like, we have an obvious ceiling for our talent. Brazdeikis might be a first-round pick. I don't really know how people grade that guy at the next level. Poole might be a first-round. I don't really know, but there's no, like, can't-miss NBA talent on this team. They lost a handful of seniors, or I don't remember what class all those guys were, but they lost Abdul-Rahman and Duncan Robinson and Wagner from their team a year ago. I think they come into the season, they're like, people aren't really necessarily going to love us this year, and they played off of that. And then when you get to the heights of being 17-0 and you're scratching the surface of being the number one team in the country, it's hard to remind yourself that you're not that good. So I think Michigan will be fine. They need a little bit of adversity. Meanwhile, that's the reason Michigan State's so good too, is that Izzo's a pro at this, where he just manufactures adversity at every turn. And I just saw the thing that Fox put together, the compilation of Izzo after every win this year, basically saying our team sucks and I don't like the way they played and we were lazy on defense and et cetera, et cetera. And I think that's what's working for them. But yeah, Michigan State is playing better right now. But for me, it is definitely those two and then a very big gap in the Big Ten for sure.
Yeah, I agree with you there. And I think that you can make pretty sound arguments for either one of them being better than the other. The loss to Wisconsin, at least for me, like, look, we knew this team was going to have some limitations offensively coming in. When you are last year during that run to the tournament, like they weren't good offensively for long stretches. For like five of the six games that they played in, they were not very good at all, almost bad. They had the one game where they scored like 100 points against Texas A&M. And then you take that team and you lose the three best offensive weapons that you have in Duncan Robinson, Muhammad Ali Abdul-Rahman, and Mo Wagner. And like that's part of the reason I had them as kind of like a back-end top 25 team coming into the season, because I thought that they were not going to be able to score at all. Lo and behold, you know, Iggy Brazdeikis ends up being a guy that can get you 15 a game, and Jordan Poole turns into Nick Young 2.0, and Charles Matthews looks like he's a little bit better, and all of a sudden John Teske's out here playing like he's fucking Frank Kaminsky that can that can defend, and that's why they ended up being this good. But they're still that team that can have those lulls offensively. And then you go into Wisconsin, and by the way, like the Kohl Center, as recently as like 2 years ago, was the toughest place to go get a win. Maybe in the country, not just in the Big Ten, maybe in the country. So losing a game there that was, with less than a minute left, a one-possession game, it's not exactly like they just lost to Rutgers at home. You know, you just lost to a good team on the road in a building that's really difficult to win in.
I think this is this happens every year with college basketball, where you're conditioned to watching. I mean, if you watch college basketball, I assume you watch a lot of college football. Maybe that's not a great assumption, but in my experience, my group of friends, you're into college sports. You like college football as well. And in college football, when you're a top team and you lose, historically, that's like been devastating for your national title hopes. That's season over. Just losing one game, especially if it's a bad team, like Ohio State losing at Purdue. It's like, okay, there goes your season. You just blew it. And you're doing that all fall. And then college football ends. And then conference play is starting in basketball. And then there's like this attitude of, now we have to treat every loss from a top five team as though there needs to be this big investigation into like what went wrong and how bad they are. And sometimes just like you shrug your shoulder, like you said, it's really hard to win at Wisconsin. It's really, really hard to win in conference play on the road in general, but certainly at Wisconsin. They lost a close game that it was a 10-point game in the end, but anyone who watched it knows it wasn't, you know, it was pretty close throughout. Sometimes you just shrug your shoulders and you're like, yeah, I mean, this is going to happen. This is always going to happen. There's a reason no team has been undefeated since 1976 in the sport, because you drop games like this from time to time. And I don't think, there's no reason to panic. What we've seen from Michigan has been consistent. They are going to have offensive lapses, but their defense can usually be good enough to overcome that. But then every so often there's going to be a night where it's not and they lose and then they move on. It's nothing to freak out over, for me at least.
Yeah, no, I hear you. And we see that pop up in the rankings all the time. Like, if a top team loses, then all of a sudden, like, they can't be a top team anymore. And you have to drop them down a couple of places in the rankings. And, you know, just because Duke lost a home game to Syracuse, where Zion Williamson missed a free throw with 10 seconds left that would have won the game in regulation, now they can't be the best team in the country anymore, even though we all know that they're the best team. And we would pick them to beat anybody in the country on a neutral court. And they would be favored in Vegas by, like, 5 points against anybody in the country on a neutral court. We can't say that they're the best team because they just lost a game. Like, when the Warriors lose, do we say that the Warriors are no longer the best team?
The exception is, of course, Nevada losing by 27 at New Mexico. Yes. Because I'm out on them forever now. That one game was enough for me to be like, what? How do you lose?
Yeah, that was bad. That was a bad moment in gambling history for me too, because I was like, oh yeah, you know what? I'm all over this halftime live money or live bet money line. And then they dug a bigger hole, and I was like, you know what? I got to double down on this because the run's coming. And then they got the bigger hole, and I was like, well, now the odds are too good not to throw like another $10 down on it. And all of a sudden, I turn around, and it's like I just lost a whole bunch of money.
Man, I got Nevada at plus 30, so I was actually really happy with that. That was fun.
Yeah, there you go, man. So the last thing I got for you is you did a couple of live podcasts, right?
Sure, yeah.
Talk to me about, have you ever been on stage before? Like, what was that like? Was that weird?
I guess I haven't really thought about it. The being on stage before. No, I guess I haven't. It was crazy. It was so to prep for it, I kind of investigated what live podcasts actually mean, like what kind of experience. It was very important to me that people enjoyed the experience of seeing us live, because the podcast we do now, no one's paying for it. So if you have a problem with it, just like, I don't owe you anything. You didn't, you know, that's on you.
Just unsubscribe and you're fine.
Yeah, just unsubscribe. It's not that big of a deal. But this is one of the first things that, I mean, I wrote a book that people paid for, but this is like one of the first times, certainly with the podcast, where like people were paying for a product. And it was very important to me that they enjoyed it. So I researched like what people are expecting from live podcasts, like what does a live podcast mean, all that kind of stuff. I had a general idea of we'd be introduced, like there'd be some golf claps, and then we just kind of do a podcast in front of, like we normally do. It's just people that are sitting there watching us do it. So our first show was in the Funny Bone in Columbus, Ohio, at a comedy club. And we get there a little early, and we're at the bar, and there's some people there that are drinking with us. And then the crowd starts to swell a little bit, and I was like, whoa, this is a different vibe than I thought, but in a good way. And then we go back in the green room, and we get introduced, or we come out on stage, and it like immediately turned into the Jerry Springer show, and like guys are just pumping their fists. And I remember that moment just being like, oh, so everything I prepped for, just throw that out the window. This is going to be a wild ride tonight. But it was awesome, man. It was like, I understand why like stand-up comics, when they talk about like how laughter is like a drug to them, and they're trying to, you know, once you get your first taste, you're trying to get that back, all that kind of stuff. Like that was certainly the case for me. It was like the energy in the place was awesome. We ended up going to four different places. It was four different shows, four different crowds. I really, really enjoyed it. We're going to try to do it again. But yeah, I'm really glad we did it. It's fun to meet people too. I enjoy that part of the job for sure, is just putting faces to Twitter handles. Basically.
How many people showed up for these?
I think we got about 200 in Columbus. I think 100.
That's a lot of people.
Yeah, that's
like, what, it doesn't it sound was, like a lot, but when you're standing there looking at 200 people and you have to say something to make them laugh, like that's a lot of people.
Yeah, it's really weird, especially the lulls of and not being able to turn to your producer and be like, hey, cut this part out. This sucks. This was boring. Whatever. It's just a bunch of people staring at you. I mean, it really is. You're just a court jester, and people are just like, entertain me, and that is the whole idea of the show. Is just, I'm going to sit here. You're going to make me laugh. Ready, go. And it's like, all right, well, here we go. I'm going to try.
What was the biggest crowd that you played in front of in high school?
I would say, I grew up in Indiana at a big school.
Yeah, that's so, what I'm saying. You played on good teams, right?
Yeah, probably like 4,500, 5,000, something like that.
Were you more nervous going out and playing in front of 5,000 people or standing there in front of 100 people in a room where everybody was drunk and telling jokes?
It's true. I was definitely more nervous for that part because the other situation, I can blame it on teammates. The other situation, I just, you know, if you airball a shot in front of 5,000 people, you just wipe your hands on your pants and you're just like, and you look at your hand, you're like, damn, yeah, that one slipped.
It slipped. Yeah, but, that was my move too.
When you bomb in front of
like, oh, what happened there? Yeah. Use too much moisturizer.
Yeah. When you bomb in front of a crowd like that, there's not much you can do. So, it was definitely more, but it was awesome. Like we had a show at the Columbus show. We had Chris Holman was there and Greg Oden was on stage with us. So that was really helpful. I had those guys, like, I can't thank Coach Holman enough for coming to do that. It was so funny because he agreed to do it. And I talked to the director of ops at Ohio State. He's kind of the one that set it up with me. I asked Holt personally, but Holman was like, just talk to Dave and he'll set it up for me. So anyway, the director of ops is telling me that Holtmann was in this, he's still in this like honeymoon phase at Ohio State where he'll just agree to do anything because he just is trying to win favor with the fan base. And so when I asked him to do it, he was like, yeah, you're a former player. I'll do anything you ask me to. And I'm like, I don't know, coach. I don't think you know what you're getting yourself into. He's like, no, it's good. You're a former player. You got to, you know, your family, you're part of this program's family. We got to do it. And so he shows up and we had this like video montage. The bit we did with him was we had clips of all of famous moments in college basketball coaching history. And we asked him, like, what kind of coach are you going to be at Ohio State? Because we've only seen you for a year and we're going to show you a clip. And is this something that you would do? So we had like the Jim Calhoun, not a dime back press conference. We're like, you know, say you get challenged on your salary in a press conference. Is this how you're going to handle it? The best ones, though, were like we had the Bob Huggins when Deshaun Butler tore his ACL. And Bob Huggins comes out and is basically like making love to Deshaun Butler on the ground. And Holman's like dying laughing because we're hamming it up. And we're like, coach, if God forbid your best player tears his ACL, are you crawling out on all fours and making love to him in front of a million people watching on television? And he's laughing. And then the funniest one, the one that I thought he's just going to get up and leave, was we show him a clip of Eric Musselman at the Mountain West tournament last year, taking his shirt off and running around, flipping it around his head. And I go, coach, when you win the Big Ten tournament, are you going to do a big pile of cocaine and take your shirt off and run around? And he just stands up and he's like, I think I gotta get out of here. But he actually sat back down. But yeah, that was and then he texted me that night. He was like, that was a ton of fun. Thanks for letting me do that. And he was cool with it all. But like for a moment there, I was like, this dude's never going to talk to me again. I'm cut out of the program forever. So.
Was he funny?
Yeah, dude, he was great. Like I said, like he, I'm not making fun of him with this, but there is an element of that. Like he understands the magnitude of being the head coach at Ohio State and the politics that go into that. So he just like wants to please people. And so he got on stage in front of those people. And you could see his juices flowing where he's like, I got to be funny. I got to bring the juice in front of these people. And he was playing into it. He even turned to me at one point and covered the microphone. And he's like, is this being recorded by anybody? I was like, no, dude, you're good. But I was like, don't say anything too bad because, you know, everyone has cell phones. But don't, you know, just let your hair down a little bit. Have some fun. It's fine.
Yeah, he's a really good guy. I like him a lot. Yeah,
so anyway.
Yeah. All right, man. Well, listen, I appreciate the time. The next time that you have a live podcast, I do expect an invite. I want to be up there on stage. I'll be the whipping boy. I'll take all the jokes.
We will definitely do that.
If I don't get VIP tickets, and I don't know, I might not have to allow you on the podcast ever again.
Like I said, I'm always in need of people to blame things on. So I would love to have you on stage. So if things go south, I can just point at you and be like, man, if we bomb, I'm just gonna be like, it's Rob's fault. You guys should have come to the show last night. We killed it last night. But, now that Rob's here, we blew it, so it's his fault. This is a Patino move. That's really all it is.
There you go. It only took 57 minutes for you to get Patino joke in there.
All right, man.
I appreciate the time, man.
Thanks for listening. Follow me on Twitter.
Give me 5 stars.